Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, August 11, 2020. Another South Sudanese opposition party splits in Juba.
My faction is not an ample faction to fight against the control, the government of South Sudan. Yes, I come to support the peace. I support Tawa and I support our leadership. Excellency President Sampoke Mayadi.
And more health workers contract COVID-19 in South Sudan.
We have lab technicians, medical doctors, midwife, nurses, pharmacists, and public health officers among the affected people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The National Democratic Movement has split into two factions. A senior military official of the National Democratic Movement says he has broken away from Lamakol to lead a rival faction named National Democratic Movement for Peace. General Nicodemus Deng says the NDM under Lamakol is not working to secure peace in the country. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In a document sent by South Sudan in Focus, General Deng says Akol's leadership style forced him to defect and form a rival faction within the NDM party.
Lam Akol always have a problem with the all factions. He have a problem with the LCLA of the Lam Akol, the Yang Mashar. When we are still in Bush, up to the IO were trying and they were kill our former chief of staff, which is Gabriel. And then also he had a problem with SOA leaders.
SOA, or South Sudan Opposition Alliance, is an umbrella of anti-opposition parties, a signatory to the revitalized peace agreement. Deng says Akol has failed to position the NDM as a party with a good working relationship with the other parties to the peace agreement, especially the Shawa. The 47-year-old defected from the government in 2015 as a colonel and joined the SPLMIO led by Riek Machar. Deng later broke away from the SPLMIO and joined the NDM. In the NDM, Deng says he rose to the rank of military general and was appointed NDM chief of staff. He says he started the rival faction to stand with the peace process in South Sudan.
My faction is not an ample faction to fight against the control, the government of South Sudan. Yes, I come to support the peace. I support Tawa and I support our leadership. Excellency President Sampoke Mayadi.
Lam Akol founded the NDM in 2016 after resigning from his position as Minister of Agriculture and Food Security. Akol said the NDM would fight corruption, totalitarianism, and ethnicity in South Sudan. Akol founded the party after he deserted the Sudan People's Liberation Movement Democratic Change, or SPLMDC, a party he founded in 2009 after breaking away from the ruling SPLM party led by President Salva Kiir. Akol blames the government for the NDM split in an attempt to weaken his party.
They've been trying very hard all this time to find weak elements within us, so that they can, you know, divide this animal called NDM, which they don't want. And they have resorted to the tribal sentiments. This guy, who was the former chief of staff, he comes from Awil. So they appealed to him on those bases, and then he started a recruitment within the army.
Akol says he sacked Deng from his position as NDM's chief of staff shortly after realizing he was planning to defect.
The idea was that if he had declared as chief of staff, then the government now will recognize him as the official NDM, and then therefore the SUA will be complete on their side.
A unity government was formed in February this year, but the parties have yet to reconstitute the national parliament. President Kiir appointed most governors a little over a month ago, but the parties have yet to complete forming state or county governments. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Press freedom groups are calling on Ethiopian authorities to release Kenyan journalist Yasin Juma, who was detained last month. According to Addis Ababa last Thursday, ordered Ethiopian authorities to release Juma after failing to produce evidence that he committed a crime. Juma was arrested last month while covering a protest. For VOA News, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Kenyan journalist Yasin Juma has been held in Ethiopia since his arrest in early July, despite a court ordering his release on bail last Thursday. Juma's lawyer, Tuli Bayesa, went back to court Monday to push for Juma's release after having paid the bail. He says the judge told him police are refusing to let Juma go.
They are telling that first it was the federal police officer that has been investigating them, and they are now saying that the Addis Ababa Police Commission wants to investigate into the matter once again, the state.
Juma was arrested along with two Ethiopian journalists while covering protests that erupted after the killing of Oromo singer Hachalu Hundeisa. Hundeisa, known for his political and activist songs, was gunned down in Addis Ababa in July, sparking widespread ethnic tensions. Ethiopian police arrested the journalist along with opposition members and leader Jawar Mohammed at his home. Police accused them of working together and charged them with inciting ethnic violence and plotting to kill Ethiopian officials. The court ordered their release on bail after police officers failed to produce evidence of any crimes, says Bayesa.
They have to release the suspect, and if they are dissatisfied with the decision of the court that is granting bail, they have to appeal against that decision, and unless that decision has been suspended by higher courts, the police is duty bound to release them in due time. But now Yasin and the rest of 11 suspects are illegally detained by the police officer, as far as we know.
This is not the first time Ethiopian police have ignored court orders to release detained journalists. The Committee to Protect Journalists, CPJ, says an Ethiopian court in March ordered police to release three arrested journalists, but police continued to detain them for weeks before finally letting them go. Muthoki Mumu is a CPJ's representative for Sub-Saharan Africa.
And I would just like to emphasize that the concern about the respect of court orders in the cases of journalists who are detained for us at CPJ goes beyond this very moment and goes even historically if we look at what has been happening in Ethiopia since January. We have previously researched and documented cases where journalists have been ordered released and they were not released.
Kenyan media reports the country's ambassador in Addis Ababa, Catherine Mwangi, sent a protest note on Juma's detention to Ethiopia's foreign ministry. The Nation Media Group quoted Mwangi writing that the embassy notes with concern that he has still not been released and that this is causing him and his family a lot of distress. Despite the arrest of journalist, France-based media rights group Reporters Without Borders says Ethiopia has risen 11 places in its 2020 World Press Freedom Index. The improvement is credited to the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who was elected in 2018 on a reformist platform. His government released jailed journalists and bloggers and restored more than 200 websites and blogs that had for years been blocked. But Ahmed's government continues to restrict some press freedoms, including arresting journalists and limiting internet access during periods of unrest, such as the recent protests. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A veteran South Sudanese politician is expressing concern over the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement. Lamakol Ajawin, leader of the National Democratic Movement, says some pre-transitional period activities have not been implemented. Akol cautions the transitional government of national unity over what he calls pulling the rope as a delaying tactic to prolong their stay in power. He calls on South Sudanese to remain vigilant and hold parties accountable to implement the peace agreement. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Lama Cole says the parties to the peace agreement are moving too slowly, which he says it is negatively affecting the peace process. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum over the weekend, Cole accused the government of throwing up obstacles to delay implementation of the peace deal. Cole points out that national and state parliaments have still not been formed, and he says the government violated the constitution because the National Assembly have not been dissolved to form a new coalition parliament per the terms of the peace agreement.
You cannot form the executive arm of the government and leave the legislative arm, and you think that you have a government. The parliament must oversee the work of the executive, and this parliament is not recognized by the opposition because they are not part of it and they are supposed to go.
The peace deal also stipulates that a unified army be formed during a pre-transitional period, but that has yet to happen. Forces are still in training centers awaiting graduation and deployment. Cole says if the government continues missing deadlines, the 36-month transitional period might have to be extended.
If these activities that I have now were supposed to be done before the 6 months, they have not been done, it means you are going to push them ahead, which also indicates that the transitional period in the peace agreement may not be enough to implement what was supposed to be done in those days.
Cole, who is acting Secretary General for the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, says the alliance remains fully committed to implementing the agreement. Regarding rumors that the SOA leader has given up on trying to implement the peace deal and has left South Sudan for good, Cole has this to say.
I'm a citizen of South Sudan. I don't hold a government position to take permission from anybody. I'm free to travel as I want. It is there in the Bill of Rights, in the Constitution. So why should my travel be a subject of discussion?
Cole is calling on citizens of South Sudan to hold politicians to their word on their commitment to fully implement the peace deal.
The people should not lose hope. We should continue working hard to see that the agreement is implemented as it is. Because this is the last opportunity for the people of South Sudan to be able to exist as one people.
Late last week, the parties reached agreement on how to share executive positions at the state level after several weeks of meetings were held by the committee tasked with allocating portfolios at the state level. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more health workers contract COVID-19 in South Sudan. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could relive an age, what age would you like to be?
I would like to go back to my secondary school days because there are other things that I see that I did not do well. I was very childish.
I would say that the age between 20 and 22nd. By that time, I think I was very more handsome than today, and I was energetic than today.
That's 18, because it's the time I enjoyed most. I got to know more about life, what the world is all about.
I would like to be at the age of 17, because at that time, we go out. We go out for hunting, playing football, or a lot of entertaining activities.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA Health Correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC, And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we take a look at the welfare of health workers in South Sudan. More than 100 health workers in South Sudan have contracted the coronavirus as they try to treat patients and combat the spread of the pandemic. A health expert with the World Health Organization in South Sudan says health workers are exposed to risks of contracting the coronavirus as people continue to ignore WHO guidelines on how to prevent the spread of the disease across the country. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Health officials say at least 115 health workers in South Sudan have contracted the virus. Dr. Matthew Toot, manager of South Sudan's Public Health Emergency Operations Center, says 83 health workers who contracted the virus worked at different health facilities in central Equatorial State. 12 are from the Abyei Administrative Area, 10 from Jonglei State, 5 from Eastern Equatorial State, 2 from Unity State, 2 from Warab State, and one from Lakes State. Dr. Toot says most health workers who tested positive are men.
The profession of these cadres varies. We have lab technicians, medical doctors, midwives, nurses, pharmacists, and public health officers among the affected people.
Dr. Joseph Wamala, the WHO's Country Preparedness and International Health Regulations Officer, says health officials are studying the risk factors that cause infections among health workers, like their personal protective equipment or PPE.
We assess the circumstances under which they got exposed. This could be related to use or to availability of PPEs or use of PPEs, the workload in terms of having enough staff at work, or the duration of work, or a combination of many other things.
Dr. John Romano, the WHO coordinator at the Public Health Emergency Operations Center, says there is little to no cooperation among most communities in fighting COVID-19.
For instance, people who have been tested through travelers screening, or some people call voluntary screening, when their result come positive, some of them try to disown that result. And in the process, we have contact numbers put off, and or people clearly saying that result doesn't belong to me.
Dr. Richard Lako, incident manager for COVID-19 at the Health Ministry, says with the small number of medical workers available in South Sudan, it puts a strain on the few health workers trying to care for COVID-19 patients.
What we are trying to do is to do our best to ensure that they themselves are protected so that they don't get the disease, in order not to be outside the work, and that will have a negative impact on our interventions. But of course, those who got positive, we have to isolate them. And when they're isolated, we need to get a substitute. We need to get somebody to take over their position while they're away.
Health Ministry spokesman Dr. Toy Loy says the vast majority of South Sudanese are ignoring COVID-19 preventive measures.
Normal functions are back. People are crowded. There's no social distancing. People are not wearing masks. And we simply don't know what is happening with the virus. The fact that our lab is testing less positive cases also goes with the fact that we are testing less samples. And so we should be mindful, the public should be mindful, that we need to consistently adhere to those preventive measures.
Dr. Bol Deng, Secretary General of the South Sudan Doctors Union, says if frontline workers are not well protected, it impacts all health workers.
If you know your colleagues that have been doing the response have not been protected, especially in terms of provision of personal protective equipment, plus the training that are standardized, you may hesitate, you know, to join the response because you may say that I may be a victim as it has happened to my previous colleague.
As of Monday, South Sudan recorded 2,473 COVID-19 cases with 47 deaths across the country. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Still on health matters, public health experts agree. Wear a mask, wash your hands, observe social distancing. These are the guidelines to help control the spread of the coronavirus pandemic. But as VOA's Arish Arabsadi reports, while global cases approach 20 million, anti-mask movement threatens the containment.
Friday in Sturgis, South Dakota, the 80th annual Sturgis Motorcycle Rally rolled into town despite public health concerns of COVID-19. Rallygoers didn't seem concerned about the advice of public health experts who say social distancing and mask wearing are key to controlling the spread of the virus that's now infected more than 5 million Americans.
No, we didn't take any precautions as we normally don't. We think the majority of this situation is manufactured. There's ulterior motives behind it.
Rallygoers like Jim Bush call risks of contagion overblown, despite mountains of public health evidence to the contrary.
And good afternoon. My administration has...
President Donald Trump has worn a mask in public on rare occasions. Leading U.S. infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci says safety regarding the coronavirus is simple.
That avoid crowds of any type, no matter where you are, because that leads to the acquisition and transmission. And I don't judge one crowd versus another crowd. When you're in a crowd, particularly if you're not wearing a mask, that induces the spread.
Yet a growing movement around the world challenges science and expert advice like those at this anti-mask rally in Stuttgart, Germany.
I'm here because I believe in Jesus Christ. This whole coronavirus is an anti-Christ issue. It is mostly against our Savior, Jesus Christ. Many don't know that. They don't know that it is really against God.
Others call for personal responsibility in protecting public health.
I think it's so selfish. Actually, these rules are necessary at this period of time. Otherwise, this virus can spread so easily. Maybe for younger people, it's not that much awful or dangerous. But on purposely, we can affect other people.
Locals estimate the crowd in Stuttgart at around 2,000, while back in South Dakota, local officials expect roughly 100,000 visitors to the 10-day Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, which usually draws about 500,000 attendees. Arash Arabsadi, VOA News, Washington.
And in South Africa, authorities continue to ease coronavirus restrictions. Technical and public health experts are working on plans to protect the health of 14 million South Africans who rely on a network of minibus taxis to get to work, school, and more. Innovators and investors say this could be an African solution to a problem that affects millions of others in Africa and beyond. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
The Humble Minibus Taxi is a lifeline for more than 70% of South Africa's workforce. The informally regulated system of vans, each seating about 14 passengers, is a mainstay in the nation's major cities and in its rural areas. But health experts worry this system is a breeding ground for coronavirus because of riders' close quarters and the high volume of passengers. A new South African nonprofit initiative, led by businessman Andile Ramaphosa, who is also the eldest son of President Cyril Ramaphosa, is trying to address this gap as the nation attempts to revive its economy after more than 9 weeks of strict lockdown, which started in March and has since eased off. He spoke to VOA via Google Hangouts.
Lockdown worked in this country in terms of reducing the spread of COVID. I mean, it worked because people were not going anywhere. That was really great and allowed government to prepare and do all the things they needed to do. When we insisted as business and as South Africans, let's open this economy, by not dealing with the commute, we basically undid what was happening with lockdown. So if you deal with the transport sector, because COVID is a virus that moves through the transport sector, if you deal with that effectively, you could actually put in an artificial lockdown through it. So for us, we saw that and we said, great, okay, so we need to come up with solutions.
HIV researcher Dr. Jenny Pfeiffer-Kutsia, founder and director of the African Potential Foundation, says her team has come up with several solutions, ranging from simple to complex.
What we're looking at is a system very similar to what's being used in ambulances, and that is to adapt a UVC air filter that allows the airflow to be encouraged within the taxi using various fans within the filter, and air passes through the filter where it's then irradiated within a matter of seconds and is then transferred back out into the taxi to be circulated out within the taxi.
Her team is also considering an alarm system that alerts passengers to open the windows to allow fresh air to circulate, sanitizing stations that passengers can use to clean their hands before boarding, and a divider between the driver and passengers. These measures, say Ramaphosa's team, could decrease the risk of infection by up to 80%. So far, SDI has fitted out 5,000 school transport taxis and 1,000 commuter taxis at an estimated cost of about $340,000, much of it provided by donors. Andile Ramaphosa says it's been a steep learning curve, but a worthwhile one.
It's been quite a journey of discovery for us non-scientists to bring all these people together with one thing in mind. We need our people to get to work safely, and we need to save lives.
Pfeiffer Kutsia says the team is also looking at how to scale the model up to fit other African countries, which use similar transport systems to move millions of people each day. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Okanga by Kweto Traditional Group. Listening to Kweto Traditional Group with the song Okanga. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And the way, 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 and the way,